This episode of The Accidental Entrepreneur is sponsored by NowSite Marketing, the first all-in-one marketing platform powered by artificial intelligence. Bring all your digital marketing to a new level with their simple three-click method. And by Digital Accelerant, the digital mobile business card. Text the word LAW to 21,000 to get connected and learn how to get your own digital business card. And by Fetch Internet, the secure high-speed app that eliminates the need to pay for hotspots or use public unsecure Wi-Fi. Listen to all of our sponsors' commercials later in this episode and follow their links in the show notes to learn more about their products and services.
Mindfulness, working on the how and your emotional intelligence, is not the sidecar to high performance. It is your backbone. It is your bloodline into accelerated high performance in a way that's sustainable and fulfilling. And to be frank, a ton of fun. Like, let's not forget fun in there. I think.
Yeah, fun has a lot to do with it. You don't like what you do. I'm sure a lot of people coming out of this thing are going to change what they did because they didn't like it and they barely made money. And they're
absolutely. I can't tell you. It's interesting because my business has both consulting and coaching. The amount of interest on both the millennial and the sort of Gen X side, because there's sort of a different career.
I'm Gen X.
The amount of interest that I have for both my services and the coaches that work for me has skyrocketed because a lot of folks have taken this time and they say, wait a second, this is not where I thought my career was going to be. You know, I did what they told me to do. You know, I've been on this overachiever path since I've been in diapers.
Right.
And I'm completely unfulfilled. I'm stressed out of my mind. I'm not the leader or, to be frank, the spouse or the parent I aspire to be. And in this time, like everything that has worked for them in the past is just making it worse.
The information provided in these episodes is for entertainment purposes only. It is not a guarantee of success or to be construed as advice of any kind. You should always seek advice from local licensed professionals before making any decisions.
The dictionary defines an entrepreneur as a person who organizes and manages any enterprise, especially a business, usually with considerable initiative and risk. People often start a business without much choice, perhaps due to a job loss or just being dissatisfied at work, and they come up with an idea they just know can be successful. They become entrepreneurs by accident. That is to say, their success or failure happens by accident, not with intention. My name is Mitch Beinhacker. I'm a corporate attorney and a business advisor. You're listening to The Accidental Entrepreneur, my podcast about how to achieve success on purpose, not by accident. Join me along with our monthly guests where we share our knowledge and help you get a hold of your business. And now on to today's episode. Hey everyone, it's Mitch, your host, and welcome to today's show. Just to remind you, the podcast is produced and brought to you by my legal practice, Beinhacker Law. We provide business and estate services to entrepreneurs, inventors, and other small business owners. Whether you're just getting started or you've been operating for a long time, contact us for all your general legal needs, from contracts to client agreements, from purchasing a new location to onboarding a new partner or key employee. We draft all types of agreements and handle most business transactions. For more information about our products and services, visit beinhackerlaw.com or you can follow our link in the show notes. Thanks for listening, and I hope you enjoyed today's interview.
Hi, so I'm Carrie Ann Bard Fournier, and I am the CEO of Vibrant Ventures, and we're a professional services firm dedicated to unlocking the potential and performance of the individuals and companies that we partner with through our HR advisory services, as well as our hard performance coaching.
All right. So Carrie Ann, thanks for coming on the podcast with me. I appreciate it. I think we were referred to each other through Tara at the Upside, I think, right?
Yes, exactly.
Yes, so I know Aaron at the Upside. I haven't met Tara except on email, but she connected.
Yeah, it's a really phenomenal community support group for smaller entrepreneurs and solopreneurs.
Right. Most many consultants, women, right?
A lot of consultants, but you know, I mean, so much diversity in the areas that folks specialize in, from e-commerce to financial services, from sales effectiveness to operational excellence to just general coaching. It's sort of every flavor of intellect and background is represented. You know, a lot are millennials. I'm sort of, it's funny to be one of the elder, wiser folks,
which was fun
to have Erin acknowledge. She's like, well, for what you do, having that gravitas, that was her nice way.
That's the way of putting it. That's funny.
Elderly, you know, because if I was in e-commerce marketing, maybe not as good from a brand perspective. But for what I do,
yeah, Yeah, she was on the podcast. We talked about all the stuff they do at the upside. And it's mostly women, right? It's not all women, but...
Mostly women. It's not, you know, meant to be excluding it, but it tends to foster that kind of support.
Sure, there. Right. Absolutely. Okay, so why don't... Let's go back. Tell me, you know, where you're from and what your background is, because we're going to talk about all that you do with Vibrant Ventures and everything and how you got there.
Sure. So, you know, it's funny. I have one of the craziest, most serpentine career paths known to man or womankind. And so when I do meet young folks who are worried about what they're going to major in college or their first job, I'm like, seriously, do not worry about
it. Right. That's for sure.
You know, even before someone's to look at my history on LinkedIn, which is sort of, you know, me as a professional, believe it or not, I grew up as really someone focused on the arts. I was a very serious violinist growing up. I traveled all over the world. I went to Northwestern and was a classical theater major. Yeah. And but the nice
Evanston, thing, right? Evanston,
Illinois. Yeah, Evanston, great town. Yeah. And what I love about it is, you know, it's not a conservatory. So I still think to this day, I'm probably the only theater major that ever took physics and calculus.
That's funny.
But, you know, I was always curious. I mean, first of all, I'm interested in it. I've now realized that I am a total nerd geek in heels.
Well, they have a very big fine art program, right? It's all
huge. It's one of the top theater program, but also one of the top engineering schools.
Right.
Really,
that's
really
true.
Great.
Right.
MBA program. If you took grad classes, phenomenal journalism school. I mean, it's very, very rich and diverse as far as the types of styles and intellects that work.
Right. Big Ten.
Yeah. And so, yeah, our football team was awful, by the way, at the time. So the good news is we assumed we were going to lose. So we just drank. And if we happen to win, we just drank more.
They've had some years. They've had, you know.
A few. Certainly, once again, dating myself after I had left.
Yeah, recently. They've had some good years.
And yeah, and somewhat recently. So. But yes, it's sometimes good to have low expectations. So, but you know, it's funny. So I took all of these other classes other than my theater major. I left off Broadway. I was in London. And, you know, I quickly realized you can't just love the job. You have to love the lifestyle that comes with it.
And that's probably true for anything.
For anything. And you know what? I was very proud of myself in retrospect that I didn't let my ego get attached to, wait a second, everybody thought I was going for this.
Right. And you
what
get stuck with that. Can't change. Right.
Because I was a working actress. It wasn't like I was just a struggling actress. And I just didn't love the lifestyle that came with it.
Now, Carrie Ann, could you imagine if you were on Broadway today? So you're struggling on Broadway and you wait tables to pay your bills and both of them are closed.
Oh, it's heartbreaking because I'm still, you know, I've gotten back into really being a sponsor of the arts. I go all the time. My 15-year-old daughter and I, she's a writer. So we've seen, she's 15 and has probably seen well over 50 Broadway shows. And it's a real passion of mine, still as an art, not as a lifestyle.
Right.
And it's breaking my heart what's happening.
Yeah. Now they're closed, what, till January?
At least.
Ugh. It's just
at least. And I was about ready to co-produce a show off Broadway, going to Broadway. That's interestingly about personal empowerment and finding your superhero inside. So it was a nice meeting of what I do now and my old self, but obviously a little bit in on hold.
Well, there may be some room next year because a lot of these shows may not open again, the smaller
so
ones,
true.
You know?
It's really, you know, it's so when we think about all the devastation in the various industries. And so what was interesting is, so when I decided to get out of the lifestyle, I said, well, what now? What does this look like? And I ended up on a technology consulting firm, really as a junior marketing assistant kind of thing.
Okay.
And for whatever reason, they thought they might want to do some HR consulting. And so they sent me for some classes at NYU at night.
Okay.
This is where I realized I was highly analytical because there was a guy, he was one of the preeminent Total Rewards professionals in the U.S. teaching the comp and ben compensation and benefits class. I was the only one probably not asleep. I thought it was really interesting.
Okay, well, that
when people go into HR, it's not really because of the numbers, but I really thought of it almost like behavioral economics, right? The psychology behind, not just, oh, you know, you're opening Excel and the math. And so maybe because I was the only one awake in the class, I don't know.
Yeah, well, you found it interesting.
Yeah, he took a liking to me and we really have formed a good friendship. And when Lehman Brothers was looking for a junior analyst, he knew the recruiter, put me forward. And it was so weird because here I am interviewing for this Lehman Brothers job. Not a year or two ago, I was doing theater and I'm competing against all of these like MBAs and like economics majors and things like that. I'm like, What of these things do not belong? And somehow I made it all the way through the interview process. And I spoke with at the very end, it was me and one other candidate. And so I had to go and meet the SVP of the entire division. And he's still a friend to this day, 25 plus years later. And he goes, so help me understand. Like, everybody really likes you. They think you're smart, but I'm not really getting why you're sitting across from me. Like, you're a theater major, what? And I go, well, Pat, I go, here's perhaps how you should think about it. And I have no idea where I pulled this answer out of. And I go, if you want someone with the most knowledge, right? Someone who's taken these classes and has a certain acumen that they're comfortable with, I'm not your candidate. But let me tell you what it takes in order to be superb in the arts. Nobody tells you how long you need to practice. It's a very nonlinear process is how you figure out how to be excellent. You just need to have the grit and determination and work ethic to move yourself forward, particularly the type of work I did. It was ensemble work or orchestral work. Okay. So you need teamwork. You need to bring those people along with you. Right. And then you have to have the courage to actually act, to put yourself forward, to put yourself out there.
Right.
So if you're looking for a mindset or a certain way of being, I'm the person.
Well, you're a good salesperson.
And it was purely authentic. The good news is I had zero to lose.
Right, of course.
Nobody expected me to be on Wall Street. So, you know, I could go in there and be, as, for lack of a better word, ballsy as I'd
like. But almost nothing to lose at that point. So what does it matter, right?
Why does it matter? And I think a lot of my career has been, why the hell not? Like, nobody's ever defined me as this. I've never thought I'd be here. So I might as well be my boldest, most authentic self and see what happens. And so obviously I got the job.
Right.
And, you know, I did the Wall Street Shuffle for many years. Back in the day, you know, every 2 years, a leader would leave. They take their people with them.
Right.
So Lehman Brothers, Morgan Stanley, Deutsche Bank. Actually, when I was at Deutsche Bank, I got the chance to be on an equity derivative structuring desk for a number of years for corporate and high net worth.
Okay.
Another crazy situation on how I got that. And, you know, it was really just pure fortitude that I think degrees are great. But I always say they shouldn't limit people from having the determination to teach themselves what they need to know in order to be successful.
No, for sure.
And a lot of folks, they don't even put themselves forward because they think, well, they won't even consider me if I don't have X, Y, and Z.
Right, which is totally not true. I think degrees show a commitment to an industry or to your interest in educating yourself and staying up with things. But at the end of the day, it comes down to your fortitude, your personality.
Yeah. And
your
listen, if I was working, I would love to,
if that's a word.
I was the breadwinner and I was working 8 hours a week. I would have loved to have been able to get my PhD in organizations like or whatever else. It's just, I didn't have the luxury, to be frank. And so, for example, when I was on the derivatives desk, I bought all the textbooks I would have needed to get an MBA. If I couldn't figure a chapter out, I'd highlight it. And then I'd enroll the guys on the trading floor. And it was mostly guys 20 years ago.
Right, sure.
And I said, listen, when I need to learn binomial valuation, we're going to Wednesdays with school night. I brought whoever signed up to a bar. And I said, you're either falling off that stool drunk or I understand this chapter. Whatever comes first.
That's good.
And, you know, listen, it was sort of done tongue in cheek, but I enrolled a lot of folks in my success. As a woman 20 plus years ago on the trading floor, it differentiated myself. I was all about the content. And so it was interesting because once I figured it out, another very similar and yet different, once I learned how to do that job, I realized it wasn't for me. Just because I could do a job didn't mean I should.
Okay.
It's very repetitive.
Okay.
It's very the sort of similar thing time and time again. And I got a call from the recruiter who talked about a situation at Merrill. They were turning around the international division. It was a complete mess. She said nobody wanted this job and it was perfect for me.
I go, okay.
Gee, thanks.
Yeah.
Right. I had made an ego. Once again, I can't tell your listeners enough. It is so tempting to stick with what you think your ego, you know, peacock wise wants to flaunt. And I'll be honest, it was tough. Like I was this woman who had gotten on the trading floor.
Right.
And I get this call to go into HR again. And I'm like, why would my ego ever allow it?
Right.
And she
said, you'd be like embarrassed to tell people, right?
Yeah. Like it would seem like what? Like, well, how does this? And she goes, and she was smart. She was one of those recruiters who really nurtured people's careers. And she goes, let me guess, at this point you're bored. You're probably the de facto COO, CAO of the desk, doing process improvement and working on strategy. She goes, that's what you love to do. She goes, I know that you're really proud of what you're doing and it's always going to serve you well, no matter what you do.
Right.
She goes, but be honest with yourself. Have you tapped out your learning of this experience? And I told her she was crazy and I hung up on her and I went home and I had a glass of wine and I just yelled. I'm like, damn it, she's right.
That's funny.
And so since then, I've always used that narrative, is this what is serving my next growth opportunity? So when I went to Merrill, or then I did Bank of America before they were together, and then I went into tech, you know, I did a lot of turnaround kind of innovation kind of work.
Right.
And it's interesting. I, once again, ego-wise, got the big job, the big money, the big office, the big title when I was at Marsh McLennan. And in many ways, once again, very, very proud of what I had done and accomplished. And now in hindsight, this was probably about 8 years ago, I realized massive adrenal fatigue, stressed out of my mind, was not seeing my family the way I'd committed to, really being a still high-powered, high-performance working mother, but still a mother. And the universe decided to send me a message, because I wasn't able to myself. And I went from working 80 hours a week to barely being able to get up a flight of stairs. Mm. And it took them over a year to diagnose me with very advanced Lyme disease.
It was Lyme.
And so it shut down my pulmonary and my
system
and everything. And it took them a very long time. I got misdiagnosed for what seemed like forever.
Yeah.
I had to go on disability. While I was on disability, the CEOs changed out. And because I was part of the executive team, like happens in many organizations, they want to bring their own folks in. And I actually like and respect the current CEO very much, but it was a different team. I was on disability, so I got laid off.
Can they lay you off while you're on disability?
Yeah, they can.
Did you see suite? They can do that?
Yeah, you can. And so, you know what, listen, I get it. You know, deck chairs were moving. I was there. And by the way, at the time, I didn't even know. I was really ill, but I didn't know it was Lyme. So I had no idea when I'd be better.
Right.
And then, not to get too personal, after 20 years of marriage and I was home and sick, some things became apparent that I'd always suspected. And I filed for divorce. So
it was do it all, pull a band-aid off,
right? All right. It was perfect storm of the universe saying, yeah, this is not what you were meant to be doing. This is not how you're meant to be living.
Well, you seem like a very A-type driven personality.
Crazy, right? Yeah. I mean, very, very. And to be frank, the people I work with right now are very A-type driven, you know, entrepreneurs.
Of course, that's who you're going to be attracted to. Yeah.
But, you know, the good news is, because of my own experience and everything that I've cultivated over the last 8 years, I can basically say it does not need to be mutually exclusive.
Right.
Mindfulness, working on the how and your emotional intelligence, is not the sidecar to high performance. It is your backbone. It is your bloodline into accelerated high performance in a way that's sustainable and fulfilling and, to be frank, a ton of fun. Like, let's not forget fun in there. I think.
Yeah, fun has a lot to do with it. You don't like what you do. I'm sure a lot of people coming out of this thing are going to change what they did because they didn't like it and they barely made money. And they're
absolutely.
Like,
I can't tell you. It's interesting because my business has both consulting and coaching. The amount of interest on both the millennial and the sort of Gen X side, because they're sort of a different career.
I'm Gen X. Point,
the amount of interest that I have for both my services and the coaches that work for me has skyrocketed, because a lot of folks have taken this time and they say, wait a second, this is not where I thought my career was going to be. You know, I did what they told me to do. You know, I've been on this overachiever path since I've been in diapers.
Right.
And I'm completely unfulfilled. I'm stressed out of my mind. I'm not the leader, or to be frank, the spouse or the parent I aspire to be. And in this time, like, everything that has worked for them in the past is just making it worse.
Yeah.
And so it's interesting because I've had some people say to me, oh, well, those folks, type A folks, never have the humility to ask for help. I go, well, some don't, but I absolutely dismiss that notion, because I find them, when they're really willing to have someone that they know, like, and trust and empathizes where they are, in as an advisor, they can rapidly see personal transformation. They're committed to it. They're all in. They're like, okay, let me absorb
it. Yeah, of course. They look for that stuff. Most of the people I know that are type A and really driven, they're not closed off to ideas. They're not stubborn.
Exactly.
They're actually the ones looking to better themselves all the time. They're like, oh, I'm driving, but I can be better than this. And they're the ones that do all this stuff.
Yeah, and listen, of course, are there narcissists?
There's always exceptions, every rule.
Bullies? Yeah, of course. We've all worked for them.
Right.
And they're not my ideal clients. I would disqualify them. Listen, I've gotten referred to someone, actually, it was their spouse. Now I understand why they're having, I'm not a marital counselor.
No, but it was obvious to you.
When I had this conversation with this guy, I'm like, yeah, I'm not, I'm actually not really.
No, and that's one of the great things about what you do and what I do. We can choose to do business with people that we like. I always tell people, listen, I can be the smartest guy in the world, but if you don't like me, you don't like my style and whatever, I mean, I'm hard not to like, but you know what I mean? I mean, there's always people absolutely. That are like, yeah, you know, there's not a fit there. Fine. That's got to be a fit or I can't help you.
The best, what's the saying? The best answer after yes is no.
Right. Of course. Always.
And listen, and the nice thing is because I was so deeply trained, you know, over the last 8 years, I've really done a tremendous amount of training in this space. And so I also know so many great coaches who, to be frank, don't want to run a company, don't want to do the operations or the business marketing or the sort of relationship development, but they're literally world-class coaches. And so the nice thing-
Well, because they've had a lot of experience of molding and shaping and learning and educating themselves, you know, that kind of, they didn't just decide, I'm going to quit my job and become a coach. There are people that do that.
Yeah, but they really don't, you know, and once again, they may be good in corporate environments. They don't know how to run their own sort of smaller company. So by attaching to someone like me who actually loves to be a leader, run a company, it's a nice scalable model because I can come in, work with the founder or the leader of a division or a C-suite, and maybe even their leadership team, but I can then supplement at a different price point and, to be frank, a different style. Listen, there are certain types of folks who work much better with engineers or lawyers.
Of course, there's always types. I'm not too good with people, engineers. Right? Yeah.
And, you know, I mean, it's a broad brush, but I definitely have in my toolkit folks who typically work with different styles better than others. And so it's nice because you can be detached from, is this right for me versus are we set up to best serve them? And if I don't think me or my team are in the place with the right skills and tools to best serve them, then I will refer them somewhere else. Perfect example, I got referred to a very senior woman a couple of weeks ago. Okay. And I thought, oh, wow, this is going to be good. She's going to be really interesting. I think at another point in her life, it would have been a good match. She's about ready to go through a divorce. I am not a divorce coach.
Yeah, and you don't want to be
in there, done that. Right. You know, it's too triggering. And of course, do I have the tools to be able to help someone with that? Of course. But it is not my bread and butter. It is not what, to be frank, energizes me. And she would be so much better served. I have a couple of really superb divorce coaches that I know. So I gave her two different styles. And, you know, who knows? Maybe in a year or two when she's on the other side.
Yeah, come back. Right. So you made that transition to HR. How long did it take you to kind of go out in the world on your own, so to speak?
So it was interesting. So when I was making my way back from the illness, it's sort of like lions and tigers and bears, oh my. It was illness, unemployment, and divorce, oh my. My yellow brick road to self-fulfellment. I've got a book in there, by the way.
Yeah, there is definitely a book in there.
I've got it. I've already got it outlined.
Okay, good.
Sit down and do it. But ironically, I would have never taken the risk because I'd always been in big corporate. I was a COO of a startup tech company. So we were a high-end machine vision AI play in the municipal space.
Okay.
And so it was really fascinating. We ended up really, it was more the patent portfolio that we ended up monetizing because the municipal sales cycle is really, really long and complex. And our CEO was used to being more B2B, B2C, and didn't really have the patience for it. It was an amazing learning experience for me to really see what it's like in a smaller business, in a completely different ecosystem. And to be frank, for me to get confidence that my instincts on how I lead and run could be portable, whether, because now I had much broader responsibility between business development, everything other than the tech development basically was my purview. And so I really said, wow, this is really, really fun. And so I went briefly back into corporate to help a friend out who had gotten a job that he just realized he was over his skis on, and it was stable and it helped my daughter because, you know, there was a lot going on. She saw her mom sick and divorced.
Right, I can imagine.
But she's the one that called me out about 2 years ago now, a little over 2.5 years ago. I was in this job. It was fine. It was much smaller than I'd done in a while, but I liked the guy I was working with and it was convenient to her school. And she just turned 13 and she's like, Ma, what's going on? She's like, you're not being you. You usually are passionate about what you do and you have fun and you're innovative. And all. She goes, you're so bored. She's like, you're so dialing it in. She's like, I don't, she's like a little life coach from heaven. And I make
how,
all this.
How old is she?
Now she's 15 at the time.
So she's young. She's a teenager. Okay.
Yeah. And she's shining a mirror in my face. And I do all of this settling language. I'm like, sweetheart, it's fine. It's close to your school. The people are nice.
Right.
And she had been in this gifted school since she was in kindergarten. She goes, Ma, all these years you've had me in this nerd school because she said I need to be enhanced and enriched and challenged. Right.
Yeah.
And she goes, why do you deserve any different?
Smart
why
kid.
Do you deserve any less? And right. I'm like, oh, crap. Now I really have to face it, right? Now I really have to model. I was very conscious of what am I modeling for her.
Right.
And, you know, I left this because the friend who had brought me into the organization left. So I'm like, oh, there's no reason for me to be here. And I kept thinking about, well, do I go back into these corporate roles? Or do I, you know, people have been telling me for years, for God's sakes, you're so well primed to open your own shop. Like, just do it. And I, you know, I went on some interviews for some big corporate jobs and I was just like, could I? Yes, same thing. I just didn't get lit up. And the more I thought about, I don't know, for any of your listeners who really listen to Simon Sinek.
Uh-huh, sure.
You know, when
I'm sure they do. I would guess they
and, do. You know, it's really about finding your deepest level of motivation, your why, that plays right. out either personally or professionally. And when I looked back at my crazy career path, which is why I spent time talking about it, from actor derivative structure to COO to global head of compensation and rewards, the common denominator has always been for me my passion and just so much fun of unlocking people's and teams' potential right. beyond what they thought was possible and getting them to the highest level of performance, even though it was scary as hell, they'd have fun and they just soar. Like they just saw themselves or the team of the organization in a way they never knew was there. And I go, that's what I do. That's what I love. No, forget about the job title. That is what I've done time and time again. So I'm going to make a company on that.
Okay.
So sounds good. So I also knew, because I'm a strategist and I'm chess moves and I've got to know all the answers 40 steps in advance.
Right.
That was not going to serve me. That was not going to serve me because there were too many blind spots. Transformation comes from filling in the gap of what you don't know, you don't know. And I realized if I waited to have all of that knowledge before I took the leap, I would never leap.
Probably.
So
not.
I went against the grain.
What do they say? Can't wait for all the lights to turn green before you head towards town?
Exactly. Yeah. And so I got the name of my company. I got a cool logo. And I just declared it. I just declared it on LinkedIn.
And now a word from our sponsors. NowSight Marketing, the first all-in-one marketing platform powered by artificial intelligence. It's everything you need to market online, and it's totally automated. Build custom websites, optimize them for Google rankings, and automatically create ads and social media posts to drive the most traffic to your sites. Their fully integrated system generates regular email newsletters, manages all your customers and prospects, and provides up-to-date marketing analytics. NowSight. You do your thing, and we'll do the marketing. Use our affiliate link in the show notes to learn more about NowSight and how it can help your business. Uplift your marketing and reinforce your brand with a digital business card from Digital Accelerant. Use a text marketing combination to stand out in front of your competition. Digital business cards make you memorable and most of all help you bring in new business through its warm lead generator. Motion graphics, intro, outro, and inspirational videos can be added during setup. Text the word LAW to 21000, that's L-A-W to 21000, or follow our link in the show notes to learn how you can get this valuable tool for you and your company. Suffering from slow internet speed? Worried about hackers? Fetch Pro gets the internet from your smartphone to your Windows and Mac computer without paying for a hotspot. Always get the fastest, most stable, and secure internet access on your computer with Fetch Pro. Follow their link in our show notes to learn more and get connected with Fetch. And now back to our show.
Now, let me ask you the hard question because it may be no. So
it's okay.
Did you sit down and write a strategic, you know, business plan? Like, this is what I'm going to do.
Very high.
Not
very
40
high
years from now, but I mean...
Very, yeah. very high level. I had okay. What I would say is, and it's funny, it's an advice I've been giving a lot of folks over, particularly in the pandemic, because there's so much we don't know. I find a lot of folks are freezing, the inability to make a decision or put something bold out there because
right.
they feel like they don't have enough information.
Right.
So what I say is, like, start with a really strong hypothesis, because people feel comfortable pivoting off of hypotheses, right? Because you get different data and it doesn't support or it supports it. And then now what's the new truth? Now what do you put down?
Right.
So So I had a starting hypothesis that in order to deliver on, you know, my passion of unlocking potential performance, is that we were going to do it through two different verticals. HR advisory consulting.
Okay.
More strategic. I call it human capital consulting. I realize with small to mid-sized companies, it sounds a little too schwanky.
Yeah.
It's not meant to sound like schwanky HR. It's just not HR outsourcing, which is incredibly necessary. But it's more of like sort of the lower order Maslow's hierarchy of needs of what a company needs. Like, I'm not going to talk about HR compliance or benefit administration. I might help an organization figure out what they need or if they've got gaps, but I'm really the person that will talk with a business leader in business language about where they need to be, where are they now, where do they see their risks, what are they struggling with, innovation or productivity or any other element of their business. And I am basically essentially the translator into the people element of how to make that happen, right?
So you work on the people part.
I work on the people part, but I'm also very analytical and numeric. So I'm usually hand in hand with a CFO or a fractional CFO. Because for me, it's all about the numbers. Like, what are you also driving? Like, how do you measure it? How do you drive it?
KPIs and stuff.
Yeah, absolutely. And once again, reporting analytics, I was one of the first to start 15 years ago on workforce analytics, or I like to call workforce intelligence. And it's data is usually the start of the really good question, not an answer, right?
So when that's an interesting comment, because it's true.
And when you see a number, you're like, huh, well, what... Let's talk about the texture and tone and what else, and how do we pivot and what do we do, versus a lot of folks don't measure it because they feel like they're going to get judged, you know, or when I get it, oh, okay, well now I'm good.
Right.
It's never, even if you exceed a KPI or you miss a KPI, there's still conversation to say, if you exceed it, is it sustainable and repeatable? If you've missed it, is it, but unfortunately, a lot of times people, it's very flat. It's very two-dimensional.
Right.
And so infusing KPIs and numbers into HR for me has always been about enhancing the conversation so you can refine your actions for highest impact. It's almost like ROI on intentions.
Right.
And actions.
Well, I think it's interesting if we bring it down to the street level a little bit. I think one of the biggest problems people have with even just getting started with writing a business plan, first of all, it, like you said, they're much too granular. Like, they get caught up on all the details, and it doesn't need to be that way. Plus, it's always going to change, and you're always going to adjust things as you learn along the way.
I talk to people all the time. It's almost like you need almost
doesn't
like
have to be agile.
It's almost like agile technology development. You have to think of in terms of business development, right?
Yeah.
And so for me, like, my hypothesis on the HR advisory side, my towering strength in this space, because I've done pretty much every permutation.
In the HR space.
In the HR space is compensation. I've done every
that's
type
your,
of...
That's your specialty.
Now, the reason why it's my... Now, I'm a specialist in a lot of things, but this is the thing that...
Then you're a generalist.
To, and there's not a lot of us
right.
to talk about it. And the reason why I stayed with it so long... I mean, listen, I'm comfortable in numbers. I'm comfortable in deep analytics, but it's not about that. It's because it's the back door into management consulting. 9 times out of 10, when people come to me with a compensation issue and you follow the breadcrumbs, it's about everything else. I mean,
well, because it's all interrelated. And you know what? When companies decouple and it becomes unrelated and they silo the different businesses, they usually fall apart.
Exactly.
And a lot of that comes with a working business plan and solving their problems and approaching things, like you said, from the analytical side of, well, what does this mean? What can I do out of this? What kind of a roadmap or a sign on the road is this, as opposed to, oh shit, we're having problems or whatever.
Exactly. It's like, there's
and
no judgment. Like, take out the judgment. It's like not black and white, but okay, what does this say? What do we do about it? How does this let us pivot?
Right.
We're also not swinging, right? Because unfortunately, when they are siloed, people just swing to the opposite off.
Well, because they're doing something and finance doesn't know and operations doesn't know and HR's got no idea what's going on, and it ends up there's huge breakdowns. They don't even know.
Oh, yeah. Well, one of my funniest conversations that I've had to mediate, you know, all the time is because the finance department usually like to claim me and HR like to claim me. And the silliest thing about headcount. So HR cares about bodies.
Right.
Finance cares about chairs. So if somebody's like part-time or they're either job share, they don't care. They care about chairs and overall expense.
Right.
Where the HR, of course, they care about the bodies, the number of people that you have to. And so the arguments that I would have to mediate with regards to headcount, and they'd be like, no, your number's wrong. No, your number's wrong. I'm like, actually, you're both right. It's a different lens. What's right. the conversation?
And you can
What's
work together.
What's the conversation? It doesn't, you know. So for me, it's been really, really fun because I think of myself more as a behavioral economist than I do like an analyst.
Okay.
You know, what's the psychology behind like incentive design? What's the psychology even about how you set up people for salary ranges and where you move them in their careers? There's a lot of actions that are even well-intended that actually have a really detrimental effect overall on someone's growth and career. And unfortunately, there's a lot of really well-intended programs out there meant for a small slice, and they forget for every time you try and incent a certain population, you have right. a disproportionate chance of disincenting an entire other, you know, population. So you have right. to be very intentional. It's all one big ecosystem, and so you just have to think through it. When I was at Marsh McLennan, one of the talks I'd give was talking about your people managing your human capital almost like a financial portfolio. There are short and longer plays, higher, lower risk, you
right.
know, areas that you need to focus more time and attention on. It's
yeah.
not one big thing. You have
no.
to average it and have specific intentions depending on your business model and that particular time. Like I'm having conversations with some of my clients now in this area. It's a very different conversation given what's going on in the pandemic.
Very much so.
You know, they have to think about their staff and the role. Forget about the high performers. The roles that are critical, the skill, even let's refine it even more, the skills that are critical.
Yeah.
And sometimes when you really get to a skills base, those skills are in some other job because
right.
that person may be in IT, but they are really good at dealing with pissed off people. Well, I'm going to move that person over here and they're going to deal with all the folks who are like freaking out over, but they're in a more linear environment. You would never move someone from something like IT into client service.
So right.
You have a skill that is critical right now.
Sure. Yeah, I know.
And so it's always interesting. It's always fun. I mean, the other side of our business that I'm incredibly passionate about is the high performance or executive coaching.
Right.
Because what's really amazing about this is when you work with a professional or a leader, not only do you transform them.
Right.
But their entire ecosystem.
Yeah, sure. Yeah.
I mean, what becomes possible for the entire team? It's just, it's really, really fun. What's odd though, it's because I'm also not really, I don't do relationship coaching. I mean,
right.
relationships always come up with my clients eventually, but I'm not a relationship coach. But
right.
here we are in the pandemic.
Yeah.
You know, everybody's working remote. And at first, I couldn't understand why so many of my clients, there's a very robust assessment that I do with them. And it really helps them see, you know, what's stressing them out and setting them up for success. It's really
right.
Helpful. And I had a bunch of them say, would you mind doing that with my spouse?
Really?
And I was like, I've never had this before. I've never had. I go, oh, everybody's quarantined together.
Yeah, they're all interrelated now.
It's in such a more profound way. And you know, what's nice about it is it gives a different language for them to interact, to
right.
be self-aware, but also recognizing where their spouse is because they had been trained and they had seen, you know, the benefits themselves and they could see what was happening
right.
with their yeah. spouse, particularly when we were so stressed out.
No, so for sure.
What happens, they were at a loss to explain it. They're like, somebody else needs to kind of have a go at this because this isn't sustainable going forward. So it was funny. Like it was, like I said, I'm not necessarily a couples coach or relationship coach, but it was kind of an interesting.
Well, I think two things can happen during these times. You could get closer with your spouse and it can improve your marriage because you say, oh, I see what this other person's going through and we're going through together, or there's going to be a lot of divorce in the next 6 months.
Oh yeah. But the divorce lawyers that I know are.
Yeah. I don't do divorce. It'd be nice if I did. I'd probably make a lot of money that in bankruptcy,
yeah.
unfortunately.
But it's so funny. So I know for me, I've been dating, you know, 8 months and we joke, it's like dog years. So it's really, we really say we're going to count it as like a year and a half.
Yeah.
So like 4 months pre-COVID, 4 months post-COVID, sort
yeah.
of like BC, AD, and then, you know. So
yeah, COVID's definitely double or triple time.
Oh, easily.
Yeah. Because we spoke, what, a couple of weeks ago? And then we're like, well, when did we speak? 4 months ago?
I know. It's like, I was going to say April, so March. And like, no, that was June.
Yeah, June 24th. Crazy. It was late in the month.
Wow.
Yeah, you lose track.
Time really does fly. But, you know, I mean, the one thing, always to look, you know, not to be Pollyanna, right? Not to have this sort of like naive rose-colored glasses.
Right.
What we are all going through right now, the economy, health. So, I mean, everything is so upside down that there's sort of a saying, sometimes you need a breakdown to make a breakthrough.
Yeah, very often. Things got to boil over a little bit. Look what's going on in the Black community right now.
Well, yeah, exactly. So fundamentally off that people have no choice but to just say, I have to try something different, right? And I do think there's a broader skill set consciousness that when hopefully, you know, when this eventually, whatever that new next normal looks like, there will be an enhancement. There will be a better version of a lot of professionals, a lot of families, a lot of partnerships. Because I just feel like I'm finding, maybe it's just because of the people I attract, there's more people willing to do the work.
Well, I think that's because of who you work with. I think the strong will get stronger in this type of environment. And I think some of the weak will get crushed and not get through this because they're too afraid. They don't self-reflect. They don't work with coaches or advisors or mentors or whatever. And they just go to work and they want it. They like that. They wanted to keep doing that and they can't now. And I think it's frightening. And I think maybe that's something you can share in terms of your reflection as to, you know, what kind of things you recommend for people that are dealing with this. And maybe they're not C-suite executives, but they had a job, they were going to New York City, now their company's going to be shut down till, or at least they're working from home till January, if they're lucky.
Yep.
Because you've seen so much.
Yeah. I mean, I think first of all, honor your stress reaction. What I mean by that is, you know, we're all typical flight and fight, right? Become like self-awareness at least makes you not victim to how you're.
No question about it. And that seems to run through everything. And we might have talked about this last time. Consciousness and self-awareness, not self-consciousness, consciousness and self-awareness, right? Because it's a totally different term, ironically. It is huge because you might not realize you're a bad manager because the way you're talking to people, because you just don't realize it.
You know? It's such a blind spot, right? And by the way, once again, don't make it good or bad. It just is.
Right. It's not good or bad. It just is.
The question is it serving you? So for example, even in these awful times, one of the first exercises I always do with every single client is choosing ways of being. We all spend so much of our time focusing on what we want to accomplish and what we want to do and have that oftentimes we are completely unaware or not intentional about the who we want to be and what is sort of that space we want to sort of build into and manifest. So like, what are those values that really make sense? And so, for example, do you want to be courageous? Do you want flexibility? Do you want abundance? Do you want wisdom? Do you want, you know, pick five. There's an exercise on our website.
Okay.
It's under one of my downloadables for type A.
We'll put a link in the show notes if I remember.
Even if you don't, just think about what are those qualities that you want to create. Pick five.
Okay.
Even in tough times, say, what does this look like in this environment? Perfect example. I had a client who was already working with me, and I knew from day one, she's an adventurous soul. And, you know, hard driving type A professional, very successful. And this all hit. And she's got three kids, two dogs, a cat, and I think her husband were all home. She couldn't go out. She's trying to deal with the school, homeschooling the kids. She's still got her full job. Everybody else is freaking out. And she just couldn't get into action. It was like ostrich in hole, head in hole. This is so unlike her. I said, well, let's try out those five words that we talked about. And adventurous came in. And I go, well, what would that look like in that environment? She goes, but I'm trapped in the house. I can't go hiking. I can't go skydiving. I can't. I go, I know. But what would an adventurous energy in your house as silly? Let's just be completely silly for a second, even if it's impractical. She decided, because she was really struggling, because she was also getting the burden of the housework, she created a scavenger map. So the kids every day would have to find the clue on how they were going to help either dinner prep or clean up afterwards. Silly, right? Completely silly. But she created, well, what if we usually do this and that? I'm like, well, what would that look like? They did it a couple of days. She did a couple of other like gamified. She basically gamified the productivity in the house.
Right, like a work wheel. Yeah. Everybody's
and
doing
it
everything.
Just really did, you know, kind of made it silly fun, introduce a different energy. This was just for her kids because they were right. nuts. All of a sudden she got back into high performance. She's like, oh my God, I feel like I'm myself again. I'm back.
Yeah.
She's like, I'm back. Like I can be adventurous in the, how I go about communicating, the ways I add fun and sort of like disruptive or non-conventional ways of doing things. I have that. That is in my power. And so particularly for those who really feel like they just want to stick their head in a hole, they've gotten to a point where they can't even act. They're so shut down. What you can do is then step into the who you want to be. And so I have a couple clients like courage, the courageous. I'm like, well, what does little doses of courage look like in this environment? What does that look like for you? And they're like, well, you know, for one, it was having a difficult conversation with somebody at work. She's like, I feel like I don't have permission to have that in this environment. I'm like, well, why? She goes, well, courage and kindness. Courage doesn't need to be. And she's like, oh, okay. Right. Courage for somebody else was just getting out of, you know, honestly, getting out of bed every day felt pretty courageous. But right. when you know that it's within your control and life isn't happening to you, that there is your authentic self can show up powerfully, even in the most difficult of circumstances, you start to take your power back and you start to get momentum again. And this isn't to say days aren't really tough.
No, they're
days difficult. Are really hard, but the yeah. who you are in those difficult circumstances makes all the difference.
I think one of the problems with this whole situation, it was totally unknown. So a lot of people, including myself, you started off on this thing thinking, oh, in a couple of weeks, we'll be back to work. And I'm sitting on my couch with my laptop and I was, you know, barely getting dressed in the morning and this and that. Yeah. And then, you know, certain people, like you said, stick their head in the sand and they start living like that. And then other people, probably the higher performers like you're working with, and like myself, I said, you know, this is going to go on for a while. So I got to get back to, you know, how am I going to create a routine in the house that gets me up? And I, you know, maybe I'll be wearing shorts, but I'm going to put on a nice shirt.
Yeah.
Show up at these meetings looking like a professional and like yep. a real person. And it got me back into, and then coming back to the office wasn't that difficult because it was really just moving my equipment and getting set up. And then I was ready to go plug back in where, and I have these meetings tonight. So I'll do them from home. I have a mic and a laptop. Yeah. So, I think that, and a lot of the uncertainty caused that. Like if we knew, listen, this is going to happen for 3 weeks and we're going to be done. We can all put up with this BS for yeah. 3 weeks and be totally unproductive. But after that, you start to kind of fall apart.
Yeah, and it's understandable. Listen, it's so understandable not to feel overwhelmed by looking so far in advance and what is the fall.
Yeah, it's, right. And that's frightening, especially when you don't know what the hell. Far in advance, so the world could end in 4 months.
Yeah, I mean, I did aliens. Dies. Who's got aliens on their bingo card for August, right? But what we do have control of is the who we want to be and how we want to show up and how we handle these micro moments, right?
Right.
It's literally the only thing in our control. And it was what I remembered learning back when I was going through that trinity of trauma, right? The illness and unemployment.
Trinity of trauma. That's a good word.
And the
those things happen in threes. Isn't that ironically in life?
Absolutely. And yeah. It's ironic. I'd had another three bad ones when I was really in my early 20s, which had really calcified this hard driving type A person. Because that was my survival mechanism in order to deal with the death of my twin brother and a couple of other things. And so I went so detached from my heart and my intuition, I went all into my head. And so until it ran out and right. that no longer worked for me, and I had to round myself out. And, I mean, I joke all the time. 10 years ago, I was the person making fun of people in the self-help aisle.
There you go.
I was. I mean, yeah. And so when people say these people will never, I'm like, oh no, you didn't know me 10 years ago.
But you changed and you made a paradigm shift and you started Absolutely. Seeing things differently, whatever reason Absolutely. It happened. You ever read that book Outliers, one of the Malcolm
sure.
Gladwell books?
Gladwell. Absolutely.
I mean, there's usually people that are going another path. Something happens that there's some intervention. They run into somebody, they find somebody, they have an experience in life
yeah.
that, you know, changes them.
Absolutely. And listen, I had that before the first tornado of trauma in my 20s. I was an actor and a musician. And so my intuition and my heart, the like emotions obviously were rich. I had just entirely shut it off and just like over dominated. So an exercise I learned a number of years ago, and I also love doing with my clients, and they always think I'm going somewhere different with it. So I say, list your top three strengths.
And
they get all like, oh, this is going to be fun. I'm going to talk about how great I am at these different things. And so we'll go through them. And then I say, well, when is that not serving you?
Right.
So a perfect example, when I did this exercise, I'm very, very proud of the fact I've been independent financially, personally, since I've been young.
Right.
You know, I've always been on my own, handling my own stuff. So being independent was so part of how I defined myself as a being that I was really, really bad at depending on people.
Right.
And guess what? You have to depend on people. If you're going to sustain yourself, if you're going to like not have massive adrenal fatigue, and by the way, if you want deeper, authentic relationships, it's got to be a two-way street. And so when they said, you know, it's not that you're, that isn't a towering strength and you should still be independent. Of course not. The question is we're using that muscle is actually, once again, not in service to what you're trying to create. Another example, which goes to that type A and how I sort of reformed, I was always very proud. It's going to sound egotistical, but I was really smart. Yeah, I'm really smart. But what did that allow me to do? You know, because I was a, you know, masculine dominated industry. I did not trust my feelings or my intuition. That does not serve me. Quantum living and quantum being comes from marrying your head, heart, and gut. And so I completely cut off these power centers.
Right.
And so I'm like, okay, and it's not that I don't use my brain and it's not that it's not incredibly important. It's not, it's just not the totality of what I have available to me.
Right.
And so, you know, for those of you on the podcast, think about what are your top two or three towering strengths and yay, awesome. But where are those areas where they're boomeranging around and kind of hitting you in the head? They're actually really not being of service to you.
Right.
They're cutting you off in the knees. And what could replace it? Because we have an infinite array of possibilities of who we can be.
Right.
Beyond who we ever defined ourselves as. And even if you think it would be highly uncomfortable, from a complete place of play, just play with it. What would, I'm kind of curious. I wonder what would that look like if I were to interact through this lens. I wonder what would be possible.
Yeah.
It's really, you know, the good news is it's real. People rarely think of terms of themselves and play, but it's
all. But you have breakthroughs that way. You break out of old patterns and bad habits.
And there's no consequences. So you try and it doesn't work. So what?
Do it in private.
So what? You know, you try it with one friend, you try practice on, you know, one meeting, you practice, you know what? So what's the worst that can happen?
You know, isn't that always the question? People are afraid of doing something. What is the worst that can happen?
Right. And then they go, well, this will happen. I go, and then what? And they're like, this can happen.
Then
I go,
the conclusion
and then
is,
what? And we do six and then what? And they're like, yeah, you know, a lot greater upside than the risk. And listen, it's always important to risk mitigate. Listen, at the end of the day,
well,
when I talk about innovation with my businesses and you get those naysayers that always, you know, people complain about, you know, or shut down innovation. They've got their place. It's just, are you putting them in the right place? Right. So the and then what and then what and then what, it does help critical thinking in a business development perspective.
Right.
In personal development, it can sort of.
Well, there's a difference between taking risks and being totally reckless with your own self-being and self-worth. I mean,
exactly.
You're in bad shape.
So, yeah. So as you can tell, I really don't like what I do.
Yeah, exactly.
Am I joking?
Well, I appreciate all the time you spend with me. Let me ask you this question. How can people interact with you if they want to find you? In the world of cyber space.
So I'm a modern woman with all of these as my company with all these different places. So first and foremost, I have a pretty robust website that I'm very proud of. So it's www.vibrant.com, but I will spell it for you because it's a little different.
Right.
VYBRANTE.
Okay. And we'll put that in the show notes anyway.
And I'm not a bad seller. We did it for a reason. So the premise is to unlock individual team or organizational vibrancy. Is you have to understand your why, your true
okay.
north, and in the
oh,
end, it's about
you
your energy. It's about your E factor.
Okay, good.
So vibrant.com. My name is Karine Fournier. My spelling, I cannot take credit for the weird spelling on that one that I give to my mom. That's KERRIAN at vibrant.com. Karine Fournier, LinkedIn, Vibrant Ventures, IG, all of that. All of your common. The only thing I have not really attached to and leveraged to date is really Twitter.
Yeah, I'm not a big text person. I mean, I put things, I use the marketing system I use, I just press a button and it goes on to Twitter, but I don't really.
Yeah, I just, you know what, I think early on I sort of fell out of that, you know, thing and just I felt it didn't serve me as well.
Yeah.
And I think LinkedIn is probably my main place that I post.
Yeah, I had somebody on my podcast in the, when did I have her on? well, before Corona, maybe last fall. And she does a, she's a small business media influencer and writer and stuff. So she does a live Twitter chat like every Thursday night.
Wow.
And it makes me dizzy. I mean, I can't.
See, I'm the same way. I think that's part of it for me too. And I knew the effort I would need to even become functionally adequate, not even superb at it, was probably beyond my capabilities.
It's like subtitles on movies. I can't watch movies that are subtitled. I miss the whole movie. I'm reading.
Yeah, exactly. I know. I'm with you on it.
And my wife would be like, "What do you mean? Did you just watch the?" No,
I'm with you. So, but you know, I post a lot on LinkedIn. I've been doing a lot of blogs and articles for Thrive Global and my own blogs.